How would you like to sell your business at the highest possible valuation in the shortest possible time span? Saul Cohen will tell us how to do it. And what's so special about Saul is that he is an experienced accountant and acquisitions advisor, passionate about helping entrepreneurs achieve financial growth through strategic acquisitions and insightful financial planning. And having supported over 100 acquisitions, Saul brings a wealth of expertise in guiding business owners through complex transactions. So Saul, tell us more about what is required for a business to sell at the highest possible valuation in the shortest possible time span.
Okay. Welcome to Awakened Titans Podcast with Lily Patrescu. Mind-blowing conversations with influential business titans sharing how you can manifest abundance, love, joy, success through quantum awakening, quantum manifestation, quantum healing, quantum miracles, exponential business growth, and innovative products and services.
Okay, so let's start at the beginning. So I think most businesses, when they are looking to sell, so let's say we've got a successful business owner who's run a business for 25, you know, maybe 30 years, they're looking for an exit. I think that in most cases, they don't really appreciate, you know, how little their business is actually worth as an asset. Because quite honestly, it's been fantastic for them and it's been an incredible asset to them, and probably provided a fantastic income to them over many years. But what they are missing is this piece in terms of, well, what is it worth to a third party? And I think that normally as a result of that, what ends up happening is that either a business is sold for a really small amount of money, or actually the business just closes. And, you know, I think it's 80% of businesses never sell. You know, it might be 85% of businesses actually, and most businesses that do sell are larger businesses, right? So that means that most businesses that are set up and are successful and run over a period of 5 years or more end up just being closed down, right? And I think that when we accept that, we say that actually we're playing a quite a significant part in this, because I think we're playing quite a significant role here, because I think that often business owners will be relying on their exit for a, you know, to give them a lump sum to support their retirement, and what we want to do is make sure that number is as high as it can be in whatever time frame we've got. So it can take a while to sell a business, but we want to do that as quickly as possible.
Thank you. Tell us more about why does you can say 80 to 80% businesses, why do they not sell? What are the mistakes that entrepreneurs make when it comes to selling their business that prevent them from actually selling after, you know, working so hard and creating a good income, perhaps for their family for 5 years to 20 years?
Yeah. Look, I mean, I think it's a fantastic question, because it sounds almost illogical. You know, why wouldn't this business sell? And I think it comes down to a really specific point, in that most people, when they build a business, are actually building a lifestyle business that is essentially a very high paying job. And the result of that is that the business doesn't have many real assets. Its biggest asset is probably the owner themselves. The owner probably is, you know, normally these owners are very humble, you know, down to earth people, and they are probably undervaluing the contribution that they bring. But when you take them out of the business, everything would fall apart. And clearly, if that is the case, there's no value. So it's normally one of two things. It's either there are no assets, or you're unable to demonstrate the value of those assets. And it really comes down to that. I think that sometimes there are assets, but the complexity around buying those assets are so it's so vast that it makes it almost impossible for a deal to happen. And that's why I think that, you know, the deals that do happen, they happen at much lower numbers than people are actually expecting, because, you know, they're sort of thinking, oh, I'm maybe going to get a multiple of revenue, or I'm going to get, you know, 6 or 7 times my profit. And then actually when it comes down to it, maybe, you know, they're just going to get 1 times their profit, or, you know, for literally just buying the client base, for example. And sometimes not even that. So I think that the main reason, it, as I said, you know, just bringing it right back, is it comes down to, ultimately, there aren't any real tangible or intangible, but any identifiable assets that are in the business that can be valued and, you know, demonstrate the value without the owner being there.
For those businesses that have been operating for 5 to 20 years profitably, and they have operated as a lifestyle business, which has provided a great income for themselves, and like you said, it has been almost like a job for the owner. What is the solution? Is there anything that these businesses can put in place in order to obtain the highest possible valuation, so that at least they can get 5 times their revenue versus, you know, just being unable to sell, or just getting like a pittance for their really hard work?
Yes. Well, I mean, look, the truth is that there's actually two options here. The first option, and this is an option that we've worked with our clients on before, is, you know, we actually turn around and say, I actually don't want to put the work in. I'm very happy to just, over the next 5 years, I'm going to take out the profits. Let's work out how to tax efficiently invest them into long-term assets that can provide for me and my family. And that is a very viable, you know, it's a choice. And it would be wrong for me to, you know, not to ignore that, because it really is a choice. The second option would be to make the choice to invest in your business over the next, really, it's a 3-year journey. I think to do it properly can be done. Obviously, there's low hanging fruit that we can sort out in a very short period of time, but it depends where you start out. But in my experience, it normally takes at least 3 years to get this done properly. And I think the first thing to do is to really take a step back and sort of assess the business and think, you know, where are the bottlenecks? What are the risks to this business? Can I start presenting, you know, can I start thinking of my business as an investor might? And I think that's really hard for people to do, because they normally, business owners, I mean, we all fall for it, right? We get so wrapped up in the day to day that, you know, it's hard for us to take a step back and look from above and think, you know, well, what's the next logical step in this business? What's this business worth? What would an investor advise? You know, we can normally be very good at doing that for our friends and other investors and other business owners that we might know, but we're terrible at doing it for our own businesses. And so actually take the first step I was advised, my business advisor advised it to me, and I think it's fantastic. It's you take one day a month out of the business to reflect on, what is the business? What is it doing? How would an investor view my business? What would they think of the risks? What would they be concerned about? How much would I pay for this? You know, what return on my investment would I expect? And I think that if you can answer those questions honestly, normally that is in of itself quite enlightening. The next thing I'd do is make sure the finances are right, you know, get the finance team to be done, you know, nice and clear. And then the third thing is, you know, just general, we work on the processes one step at a time to make sure that the owner is removed, at least from the day to day. There's a sensible second tier management who can run and operate the business effectively.
Thank you. Tell us about the businesses that are doing everything right to not only sell at 5 times the revenue, but I think in some cases I've seen, like, for example, recently I've seen one guy who sold his business for 80 million in 6 months because he's using AI. And I'm sure that's like a very isolated case. But I'm wondering about, what do these businesses do that are able to sell at 20 times their effort.
Okay, so I think, well, look, actually, I think first of all, that those cases, as
Right.
you mentioned, right, those cases, they are the exception and not the rule. And I think that what ends up happening is everyone sort of gets those big numbers into their head and it gets sort of absorbed into them. Actually, at the smaller end, and when I say smaller end, I mean 100K to 200K EBITDA, the multiple is maybe on a good, well-run business at that size, the multiple is below three, right? 3.5 is the maximum, really, that you would sort of see in that case. There are, of course, exceptions. And the exception is always because there is a particular asset that has a very demonstrable value that I know and I really highly value in this business. So, for example, if you look at Tesla, right? Tesla's share price and the value of the business is infinitely higher than Tesla's income currently. And the reason is because the market has looked at what Tesla's done and it said that Tesla has created particular assets in the terms of the technology that has been developed, the batteries. Originally it was the AI, driving intelligence, but now really it's the batteries. Yeah, that we look at this business and say, this technology is so valuable. It's going to be leveraged over the course of the next 10 years, and it's really going to generate significant income, positive income into that company. And generally, when share prices fall or valuations fall, it's because of the fact that our impression of those assets and the income generating power of those assets has changed in a negative way. And we're now thinking, actually, those batteries might be really valuable, but they're not as valuable as we thought before. And that's why you see really big share prices in big corporate companies. But actually, the truth is that it works in a similar way for smaller businesses, right? So the company that you're talking about, they will have developed a particular competitive advantage that no one else in the industry has. They would have created something that is incredibly unique, right? So an acquirer would look at this business and think, if I buy this business, I'm going to be able to generate higher profits than everyone else in the industry, and therefore I'm going to be able to dominate, which means that this business is now more valuable than every other business in the industry. And that's why it's really rare to get those kind of multiples. For most business owners, their best case scenario would be sort of a 3 to 5 times multiple exit. And the reason why that is the case is because they have a small niche in which they're operating in. They're well respected in their niche. They have a nice area of influence. It's a tidy business and it generates consistent, positive, and reasonably risk-free cash flow. If we can demonstrate that to an acquirer, then to the extent that we can demonstrate to the acquirer that the business is low risk, the acquirer will pay a higher multiple because they're less concerned about getting a higher return on investment, right? So always an inverse relationship between return on investment and risk. The lower the risk, the more I'm willing to put in and only get a small number. I'm happy to get paid over a longer period of time because I'm less concerned about the risk in this business.
Thank you. For those companies that are very likely to be sold at a really good price, what are the types of things that business owners put in place that kind of like excite you when you see you're thinking, wow, this guy is really being a good guy or this girl's doing a really great job at this? What are the kind of things that they tend to do that are a really great step towards getting sold, aside from everything you said?
Yeah, so I think it's being able to demonstrate the maturity of management, and to be able to demonstrate that the people are look. So acquisitions actually before it's about finances, about people. First and foremost, acquisitions are always about people. People make acquisitions and people break acquisitions. And if you can demonstrate that you have a team who are mature enough to run your business with a small amount of guidance and actually run that business in a sensible and intelligent way, then any acquirer is going to look at your business and be like, wow, I'm buying this business. I want this team. They're going to be fantastic, and they just need a little bit of guidance. In terms of how that shows up, it will be that generally they always have management accounts that are reviewed, and they always have, you know, they know their metrics and their targets, and you know, they might have different words for them, OKRs and, you know, KPIs and all different funny lingo. But ultimately, what they're doing is they are tracking the numbers in the business. They are responding to changes in the numbers in a organized way, and they have a structured way to create improvement and articulate that to the rest of the business over a period of X number of years. So ultimately, if you can demonstrate that management is doing that, i.e. reviewing performance and making changes or making decisions rather, because not always needs change, sometimes we need to wait, but making sensible decisions based on the data being provided has a good method for making decisions, you know, and a good way to demonstrate that throughout the business, then really it just becomes about culture and all the other really great important things. But ultimately that demonstrates that the business is being really well run and is an asset in of itself.
Thank you. Tell us three case studies of businesses you've worked with where, let's say, they were doing very well and then you've implemented certain steps for them where that has led to a higher valuation over the short to longer term.
Yep.
And tell us about the results that this has had in terms of, like, were they able to sell their business quickly and how long it took, and any details you can give us about, like, some successful case studies.
Yep. Okay, cool. So obviously it's quite a lot. We've done quite a number of acquisitions. I mean, you know, one that pops to mind is a few years ago, we were working with a care home, and the care home was doing really well, maybe making about £300,000 in profits per year, you know, doing actually really well run business. But the accounts in the care home was disastrous. It was a mess all over the place. They had the bookkeeper that was in there basically was found to be incompetent. I think there was an issue of fraud. When they came into us, they were looking to sell, trying to get an exit, trying to get a buyer, and the best number that they were getting, and everyone was coming in giving really high numbers in the letter of intent, and then getting into due diligence, and just this actually happened twice. They looked at the through the accounts, and on, you know, both times the number went, you know, in one case it went from 1.5 to like 600k, and in another case it went from 1.2 again to sort of like 600-700k, right? So it really being knocked down because of the fact that we're just really concerned that you're just making all the numbers up, you know, and the business owner wasn't making it up, but equally, you know, didn't know how to prove it to the acquirers. And ultimately, when trust is eroded, a deal would always fall through, because as I said, acquisitions are always about people. So look, what they came to us actually around that time, around the deal happening, and you know, they were looking for a new accountant because of the fraud, etc. And so we came in, literally our thing was, let's just tidy up and make sure you've got regular management accounts. You know, ideally I'd love to have done it monthly, but in this case we just did it quarterly. You know, let's make sure, you know, something is better than nothing. Let's just take one step, next logical step. So that way, the benefit of the monthly management accounts meant that when we recruited them a new bookkeeper, because we thought it was better for them to have the bookkeeper in-house, when we recruited them a bookkeeper, it meant that work was being checked by someone else, right? In this case, us. Actually, this time when they sold it, well, they currently have an offer for 4.3 times multiple. Their revenue's gone up slightly, so the acquisition is probably going to go through at around 1.6, and you know, that's in the latter stages of that deal, and it looks like it's going to complete in the next couple of weeks or so. So obviously that's quite a big deal, right? Because, you know, first of all the 1.6 is a bigger offer than anyone's came up with previously. Second of all, it's actually significantly higher than the 600k that was being offered after due diligence in the other cases. So it's more than doubled the value of the business just by, again, just by making that one change. We didn't change anything else about the business. We literally just increased, you know, made sure that they had regular management accounting and that it was up to date and, you know, accurate.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Tell us more. Tell us two more case studies of businesses you've worked with where you improved their profits by selling the business.
Yeah. Okay. So another one was it was quite a rare case. So I say it's a rare case because it was a woman in manufacturing, which is, you know, I mean, there's no real reason why women shouldn't be in manufacturing, but generally that doesn't happen. She inherited the business from her father. And yeah, she was honestly incredibly stressed. You know, she had legal cases left, right and center. She couldn't sell the business. She'd had the business marketed for 3.5 years. She was making 3 million in revenue, doing really, really well. But you know, the business just wasn't moving. And so what she did, she engaged us, she engaged us to basically say, look, I'm just really stressed. There was a legal case that had just come up. There was basically a HR issue on one of the sites. And as the director, she was being held legally responsible for that. And she's like, I'm done. I want to retire. I want out. I can't do this anymore. I'm absolutely finished. And actually in her case, what we did was we looked at her management team and looked to see who in the business could we promote, who could we move, yeah, let's move her out of the day to day. And we sat down with her, worked out what she was doing day to day, who in the business was there that she could have, who would be maybe potentially outside. As it turns out, the floor manager was a perfect idea of an MD, but she didn't want to have only an MD. She wanted to have someone else from, as well, from outside. And she had like someone who was a sort of a consultant who came in as sort of the acting CEO, so to speak. And you know, between them, actually, they made a really good partnership together. She was removed pretty much over the next 6 months, removed pretty much entirely from the day-to-day operating in the business. The business actually grew in the next 2 years by 1.5 million as well, because partly because of new energy and new strides. And it sold a year later for 2.5 million, which, yeah, again, fantastic. Yeah, it wasn't selling before and it basically got snapped up in the next year. And it's, again, in this case, it was very simply, all we did was just remove her from the operations, and we did that job for the seller, so that the seller didn't have to see it. Do you know what it's like? It's like, you know, when you sell a house, and you sell a house, and the house is a mess, and it needs painting, and it's whatever. Any buyer coming in, it's much harder for them to see the potential of this business, or of the house. Sorry, but if you do the house up, you dress it up, maybe you rent some furniture to make it look nice and show people what it's going to be like to live in the house, then they can see it, they can picture it, and it makes it much easier for them to make the house purchase. And it's exactly the same with the business. We do exactly the same things. Instead of making the acquirer, the investor, look and see, where is the business? How could I run it? How could I make this successful? We do it for them. And the more we do it for them, the more they're willing to pay, because it's easier for them to picture the success of this business.
Thank you. Tell us your third case study of a business you've worked with where you improved their profits in terms of selling the business.
Okay. So the last one, what would be a good one? So look, again, so actually this one was similar. So it's electrical. It's actually more engineering. So it's electrical engineering. They used to make specific type of electrical pump, really niche, really great product, really great business. The problem in that business was actually just that the processes everywhere was just completely dated. And actually what we did was we were working with the buyer in this case. So the buyer bought the business at quite a low multiple, and he wanted to flip it because he could see that the business was incredibly well respected, had some fantastic contracts with really well-respected high-end, well-respected clients, but didn't have any real source of, you know, bringing its processes to the future to be able to take advantage of those contracts. And so what we did actually with them was literally just think about, you know, get them to map out their processes. So we got them a financial controller, a finance director. We put the finance director in place and worked together with the finance director and the managing director. And we basically set up a process management board. And the role of that board was to go through the process in each of the areas of the business, throughout operations, back office, everywhere, and try and work out, you know, with obviously the people who are there on the coal face as well, what is the current process and how can we streamline this and bring this to the 21st century. Because literally in that case, everything was handwritten, paper was flying all over the place. And actually within 3 years we increased the value of that business by 1.5 million, which was, yeah, I think phenomenal.
Thank you. Tell us some brief things that entrepreneurs who are thinking of selling their business can put in place right now so that they can increase their valuation.
So hopefully we've touched on quite a lot throughout this, particularly in the case studies. So I'm hoping that these will be a more summary points rather than the new information. But I think the first thing will be to make sure that you've got good data and good financial data and controls throughout the business. It's not just about making sure that you're tracking the data. It's about making sure that you can rely on the data that you're tracking and that there's checks in place and that there is, you know, you're thinking about, well, what is the risk of an error and how are we trying to mitigate those risks? I think that's really important. Then it's about making sure that you've got good, consistent processing controls so that you can demonstrate to a buyer that the business operates consistently over a long period of time. And, you know, and that should be, you know, it can consistently generate new business. It can consistently deliver on that, and serve those clients. You know, it can consistently order and produce supplies, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Everything in the business needs to be as simple and consistent as possible. I think the third thing is making sure that you've got the right team in place, and appreciating that those team, you know, the right team will be the people who build the assets for you, and understanding that, you know, assets aren't necessarily buildings or fixtures and fittings. The assets can also be things like a process. They can also be your brand, your reputation, the reputation of your employees. And I think it's very easy to overlook those things, but I think actually they are tremendously valuable and they should not be overlooked.
Thank you. One last thing. When it comes to the progress of the business, how important is it that the progress of the business happens relatively fast? So let's say if a business is doing really poorly for, let's say, 5 years, but all of a sudden it figures something out, maybe with your help, and then it ends up having much higher profits. How long would they need to continue doing that so that they can be sellable? Because I'm assuming the investor would look at previous performance, let's say 5 years of absolutely terrible performance, and then you come in and then you help them optimize much, they increase so much in terms of, and we need to do that for 3 years, 5 years, or just 1 year is enough to get the business valued at a higher price.
Look, normally 3 years is like best case. I think after you can, I think in today's world, 5 years is almost non-existent anymore. I mean, there are some people who still use 5 years. I just think that the world moves so quickly that 5 years tells you very little. I think that 3 years generally tends to be the rule of thumb that people are looking over. Personally, I would look at 12 months. The only benefit in looking at 3 years is to be able to identify those big jumps, because they are important, those big jumps, and you're absolutely right to flag them. And I think that it's about understanding why those jumps have occurred and what it is. Right, because if it's a one-off case, what we want to know is, I want to know, is that jump happening because of something that's a one-off and it's never going to return, or is this jump happening because you've implemented a change, you've implemented a new process, and you're seeing the benefits, and actually probably as the business grows, those benefits are going to increase. And that's really the main thing.
Thank you. Tell us where entrepreneurs can connect with you.
LinkedIn is definitely the best place. So I'm sure you'll be able to link it, give my LinkedIn. But that's definitely the best place. I post fairly regularly on there. Lots of hints and tips about buying and selling businesses. So absolutely, LinkedIn is the best place.
Follow us for more interviews with world's most influential business titans, providing you with the insights to awaken to your full potential so you can get paid to be yourself, find true happiness, and manifest anything you desire.